If you have a Bible with you, can I encourage you to turn to Psalm 121 as we look at this together. I was reading a really good article this week on the Gospel Coalition website. I think I will post it onto our Facebook page this afternoon. It's written by a lady called Clarissa Moll, and she was a young mother of four children, and in 2019 she lost her husband, and so was left as a widow and with four young children to bring up. And she was saying at the end of 2019 and looking into 2020, she was looking forward to a year that would be much better and a year in which she could leave behind some of the trials of the year before, not at all expecting 2020 to work out the way it did. And maybe as we come to the end of 2020 and into 2021 now, we're looking for a year that is a lot better. But I don't want to disappoint you, but there is a danger that it mightn't be a lot better. When I was growing up, there was a common expression around home, which was, don't complain because things can always get worse. And that, now, I want to encourage you today, but I want to encourage you by being realistic at the same time. We don't know what this year will hold for us. And that is why this psalm is indeed so encouraging for us. And the cry that comes out at the beginning of the psalm, where does my help come from? As we look to the future, how can we face uncertain days? So we're not going to avoid the reality of the challenges that are ahead, but we're going to think in the midst of these challenges, in the midst of difficult days, where can we get hope from? How can we be encouraged as we face uncertain times? And in many ways, that's what this psalm is all about. We're going to think of four questions about this psalm this morning. The first one is why? Why is there this cry for help? Well, if you look at the introduction of the psalm, it describes it as a song of ascents, which means it was a song which was sung by the pilgrims as they traveled up to Jerusalem for one of the three great feasts that took place there throughout the year. And it therefore can be seen today as a song for pilgrims who are traveling to the heavenly Jerusalem. It's a psalm to encourage us on the way to heaven. Now, this is something very important. We must not separate the encouragement and the comfort that we find in this psalm from a life of pilgrimage. This psalm and the promises that it brings only applies to those who are pilgrims, who are heading to heaven, those who have pilgrim hearts seeking to do God's will. And so, is this true of you today? Are you a pilgrim? Are you someone on the journey to heaven? Are you someone who is saved? There's no comfort, there's no hope to be found in this psalm if you do not come to Jesus. Paul spoke of those who are without Christ and without hope in the world. And so without Christ, there's no comfort in this psalm. But with Christ, there's wonderful comfort. And for those who profess to be Christians here, have you a pilgrim heart? Have you a sense of heading for glory? Have you a sense of living for treasures in heaven rather than the treasures of this earth? We can be so easily distracted from a pilgrim focus on a pilgrim attitude. We can live as if this world is our home we're going to live in forever. We need to live as those whose home is somewhere else. Now, what is the catalyst? What is the cause in this psalm for this cry of help? Well, we see here it's the great hills which are around Jerusalem. It says in verse 1, I lift up my eyes to the hills, from where does my help come from? It's the mention of these hills which causes him to issue this cry for help. Now, the hills, the mention of them can be taken, I think, in two different ways. First of all, their permanence speaks of a sense of security. And so as the psalmist looks to the mountains, he looks to the hills, something which are sure and constant, he wants something that is sure and constant in his life also. And that's probably been the most common way that this psalm has been interpreted. And indeed, in Psalm 125 and verse 2, the hills of the mountains are mentioned again, says, as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore. And so there's that picture in Psalm 125 of the hills being like a security for Jerusalem. And so this person, maybe they're thinking of the hills, something secure, and they want that security in their life. But there's a second possibility, and indeed I think a more likely possibility, that the hills were a place of danger and threat. The hills around Jerusalem is where thieves and robbers would wait to attack pilgrims and to steal from them. Think of the story of the Good Samaritan. Where was he? He was traveling from Jerusalem, and thieves and robbers were waiting for him. And indeed, the commentators that I've read probably say that this is probably the best interpretation. It's someone, as they're on the journey, they're frightened about the journey, they're frightened about what waits as they travel to these hills and through these hills. That's what causes them to ask the question. And so, for us, this is encouragement for us. As you think of difficult days, of trying days, this psalm is to teach us where we can get help from. In days of trial, it is teaching us where our trust needs to be found. So why? It's because of the trial that is ahead. But then secondly, we look at the who. Who does our help come from? What does the psalm say about this? Well, look there at verse 2. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. The first thing we say about the who is that the who is the covenant God. My help comes from the Lord, the psalmist says. Now, the word Lord is translating a Hebrew word, Yahweh. You'll see it there on the screen. It was just four letters in the Hebrew language. Hebrew in the Old Testament didn't have any vowels. It just had consonants. And so this was the name Yahweh, the great I Am, the name that the Lord first revealed to Moses at the burning bush. It's God's covenant name. It's God's name by which he comes when he's making promises to his people. Let me just mention the name Jehovah, which is sometimes used instead of Yahweh. Where does the name Jehovah come from? Actually, you'll not find the name Jehovah in the Bible. It comes, and this is what they did. They took the consonants from Yahweh, but they didn't know how to pronounce them, and they changed them slightly, and they added the vowels of a Hebrew word, Adonai, which means master. You see, when the Hebrews read the Old Testament, and they came to that word Yahweh, they never would pronounce it around the time of Jesus, because they said it was too holy. Now, God never said that. So they wouldn't pronounce it, so when they saw Yahweh, they just used the word Adonai. So later people mixed up Adonai and Yahweh together to get Jehovah. But the name of the Lord in the Old Testament, if you see that word Lord in capitals in your Old Testament, L-O-R-D in capitals, that means Yahweh, I Am. That's what the word name means. And so what we see here is that this pilgrim finds hope in the God who is Yahweh, the Lord, the God who made promises to Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, and the God who kept those promises. The great Yahweh, the great I Am, who came to Moses at the burning bush and was saying to Moses there at the burning bush, I am the God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. The promises that I have made to them, that I will deliver their people after 400 years from Egypt, I am now coming to keep those promises. That's the God that I am, the covenant keeping, the faithful God who will do what he says. The name Yahweh is God's personal name. Do you remember Moses says to them, what is your name? When the people ask me, God, what is your name? What shall I say? And he says, I am Yahweh. It's a name through which he makes himself known. And faith comes in knowing this God in an intimate and a personal way, as God makes himself known to us. Now, as we think of the Lord, as we think of Yahweh, the great I Am, we will always be incomplete in our thinking unless we turn to Jesus. And in John's Gospel, how did Jesus constantly describe himself? He says to the Jewish leaders, before Abraham was, I am. And they went to stone him because they knew that he was saying he's the great I Am. He is the Yahweh of the Old Testament. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and life. And always the I am in each of those statements. It is emphasized. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the vine. I am the door. I am the light of the world. And do you remember when the soldiers came to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane? And Jesus says, who are you looking for? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And some of our translations get this wrong. What Jesus then said was, I am. And they fell down in front of him. Something of his majesty was breaking through. Jesus is the great I am. Jesus is the one through whom God makes himself known. And it's this relationship with Christ which can give us confidence as we look to the hills, as we look to uncertain death. So he is the covenant God, but then secondly, he is the creator God. Verse 2 says, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Speaks of the majesty and the glory of God. This places the God of Israel as being so different from the gods of the other nations around them. Nations were happy enough that you, Israel, can have your God, and we, the Philistines, can have our God, we, the Ammonites, can have our God, and so forth. And your God only really has control in your area, in your country, in your region, and our God will rule in our area. But what this is saying is the God of Israel is not just a wee local God. He is the God over all. He is the God who has made everything. He is the creator of this world and every person. And without a focus on God as the creator, we can greatly underestimate who God is and what he can do. We can have limited expectation of how God can help us if our God is small. But focusing on God as creator gives us a much bigger picture. Creation reveals God's qualities. You see on the screen there Romans 1, and Paul says, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. And saying there, God's person, his eternal power, his great strength, which can sustain us, is seen in the world he has made. His divine nature, his qualities, his wisdom, his goodness can be seen in the beautiful world around us that he has manufactured. And so it's by looking at the world around us and taking time to do that. We live in such a beautiful country, beautiful scenery. Get into the countryside and look at the world around us. Get a bigger picture of the God who is there. Derek Thomas, who was previously a minister in Stromillis Road Evangelical Presbyterian Church in Belfast, and now a minister and professor in the United States, says this: the threats which arise on the journey to Jerusalem arise within a world the Lord has made and which he sustains. In this world, not in some imaginary idealistic world, God reigns supreme and triumphant. And that's what the emphasis on creator said. It's this world. It's the world that we live in, the world that we face struggles in, the world that has pain. It's this world that we are in, that God rules in. He's in charge of everything. And therefore, we can have hope. So it's knowing God as the covenant God. It's knowing God in an intimate relationship through Jesus. And it's knowing God in the glory of who he is as creator, which helps us be confident for the future. We need both intimacy and majesty in our knowledge of God. It's those two things together. Intimacy, knowing God in a close way, but knowing God who is majestic and glorious, gives us confidence for the future. So we've looked at the why, we've looked at the who, and then thirdly, we look at the what. What is our help? What does God do? Well, the key idea in this psalm is the idea of the Lord who keeps his people. Six times the Lord is described as keeping his people in verses 3 to 8. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and coming in from this time forth and forevermore. So to keep, which is the central idea, means to watch over us, to protect us, to guard, to sustain us, to preserve us, to provide for us. It's a word which speaks of how a shepherd would provide for every need of his sheep. And what a wonderful confidence this should be. The Lord keeps his people. The Lord watches over his people. The Lord provides for his people. Now, it's important to remember the context in which this promise to keep is given. This is not a blanket statement for everyone. This is a statement made for pilgrims on their journey to Jerusalem. And for us today, it's a statement made for those of us who are on our journey to the heavenly Jerusalem. The Lord is promising to keep us on that journey and to enable us to persevere on that journey. A very slippy morning reminded me, there was a few years ago, around this time of year, we had a shocking amount of falls within the congregation. I think there's maybe 8 people who had broken bones in the congregation two or three years ago. And you know, I visited some of those people. I remember visiting some of those people in the Royal and in Musgrave. And you know something? One passage I generally didn't read to them was Psalm 121 because of verse 3. It says there, he will not let your foot be moved, or he will not let your foot slip, some translations say. I always thought, how can I read that to people who have just slipped on the ice and had a fall? How do we balance that up? Has God failed to keep his promise not to let his people slip? Or you take verse 7, which speaks of how the Lord will keep you from all evil. How do you read that to a person who has suffered evil in their life? How do we answer that? Well, the answer is that the promise here not to let your foot slip is to sustain us on the journey to heaven and not to allow our foot be moved from that path to heaven. That's what the promise is. It's not promises, and unfortunately, take your care when you're going to your car this morning. Please, we don't want any accidents. I don't want to have to visit any of you in hospital. Take care. It's not a promise that you'll not slip on the ice. It's a promise that he will keep you on the journey to the New Jerusalem. And in the journey to the New Jerusalem, he will not let evil stop you from going there when you belong to Jesus. Now, this is not a psalm that promises to keep us away from painful days. It's a psalm which promises to keep us, to sustain us in the evil days that come. So it doesn't keep us away from evil days, but it's a promise to sustain us. It's a bit like Isaiah 43, as you see on the screen, that lovely promise. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. He doesn't promise that we don't have the trials of life. He does promise to be with us, to walk with us, like with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. They would have known Isaiah 43, the promise to be with them in those difficult days. And the story of the gospel is a story of a God who comes to us in our suffering. Then one final point. We've looked at the why. We've looked at the who, the what, and finally the when. When does God help us? And the first answer to this is always. Look there at verse 3. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Verse 6. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. There's no time when the Lord will not be watchful for his people. God never sleeps. Do you remember Elijah on Mount Carmel when he was at that contest with the prophets of Baal? Do you remember how he teased them? Shout a bit louder, maybe your God's asleep, he said to them. And he said that with such confidence because he knew that his God never slept. His God miss nothing. Yahweh, the Lord, is someone who is always there, always watching. He sees every bad thing, every painful thing, every challenging thing that comes into our lives. There's nothing that escapes his notice. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't doze off. He is ever watchful. What do you make of verse 6 there? The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. Now, we can understand in a hot country being protected from the sun. We can understand that. Maybe it doesn't apply just as much here, but in a hot country like Israel, we can understand. But what about the moon by night? The moon shall not harm you by night. Well, it could be taken both day and night, the Lord will protect you. You could be saying that. Some of the commentators, Derek Thomas, Alec Mateer, they say that this is maybe speaking about imaginary fears, imaginary dangers. And so often the fear that we have isn't over things that actually happen. So often we have fear over things which never come about. But they can cause as much fear over the things that do happen. And I think what they're saying is that this psalm is saying the Lord will be with you in the real dangers and in the imaginary dangers. The Lord will be able to give you a peace, a hope in the middle of them all. Real or imagined, he can do that. So when will he help you? Always. And secondly, when will he help you? Forever. Look at verse 7 and 8. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. The Lord's commitment to his people is not short term. It's eternal. He doesn't get bored of us. He doesn't lose his patience with those who belong to him. His grace is never ending. None can pluck us from his hand. He will protect us. He will sustain us. And it's important in the trials and suffering of life to have a long-term and eternal perspective. This is what sustained Paul. Paul says this, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us." And the thing that encouraged Paul was, yes, he suffered so much. We were thinking about one of his shipwrecks. He had several shipwrecks. We were thinking about one of them there. But what Paul is saying, listen, all I'm suffering, nothing compared to the glory that's coming. And when we remember that the difficult days will pass, and then we'll be in eternal glory if we belong to Jesus. That gives us a different outlook. It gives us encouragement as we go through these trying times. So let me quickly recap what we've learned. Where does my help come from? Why? Because of the trials ahead on our pilgrimage to heaven. Who? The covenant God, the creator God. What? To keep us on the journey, to protect us. And when will he do that? Always and forever. Boy, can't we face 2021 with confidence? Because of the Lord. Amen.